Hey, welcome back to the Diamond Download. It's another Tuesday. We're recording the podcast and it's my favorite part of the week. How you doing, Chase?
Dude, likewise. Good. Great, man. Been a
You know what's cool,
solid
man?
week.
Listen, anytime I do, like, okay, so a lot of time, like when I was a kid, I didn't really know what entrepreneurs did. Where it's like, oh, he owns a business. So what does he do? I don't know. You know what I mean? It's one of those where it's like, what does a business owner do? And for my day to day, a lot of it is talking to customers and like talking to my sales guys and talking to my marketing team and just like trying to like brainstorm ideas to like bring more money in. But I don't really feel like an entrepreneur then. I kind of feel like my own employee. The only time I feel like a business owner is when I'm dealing with like bank issues. Like, dude, anytime I'm talking to my payment processor guy, Ian, shout out Ian from Easy Pay Direct, or right now I'm dealing with Mercury issues. I feel like an entrepreneur. I feel like I'm really doing stuff, making the world kind of go, especially if my girl's here, because she doesn't really know what I do either. And so, like, if I'm on the phone with the bank and my girl's there, she's like, oh my God, he's so cool. And rich. You know what I mean? Like, don't you just, and you know what's even better, bro?
Right,
Tell
just call
me.
me. I'll pretend to be your bank 7 days a week, 24/7. Just say I'm calling Chase Bank.
Oh, yeah, your friends made wingman for you, but do they ever pretend to be the bank and then
Yeah,
just
yeah.
on speaker, say the balance really loud, be like, hey, wait, yeah, just double check. And like, what's my balance? Oh, I look at actually, you know what? My screen's not big enough to show the balance. So I can't tell you, but you could probably try and pull it up on your screen.
Yeah, exactly. I
That's
got you.
kind of yeah. But I was gonna say the only thing that's even cooler than that is telling my EA to do all this stuff for me because I don't want to do it. You know what I mean? I don't actually want to do it. I don't want to deal with like the bank and I don't want to do a payment process, but like if I can send a text to Abby and be like, yo, Abby, putting you in a group chat with my payment processor guy, whatever he wants, just do it. That is being an entrepreneur. Now,
Well,
I
it's
just
funny you said that. I kind of have the opposite situation. So with my LinkedIn business, I've got this girl that like pretty much runs the show. Her name's Olga. She's fantastic. And every day she's giving me a to-do list. Hey, so and so needs something from you. So and so needs that from you. So it's almost like I'm her EA, but in like the best way possible. 'Cause like we're probably in right around 200 group chats, whether it's, a group chat on iMessage, Telegram, and WhatsApp are the three we use. So there's like 200 group chats that we're in for the LinkedIn business. And brother, there must be probably a north of 1,000 messages a day across them all because people are sending multiple posts per day. We're responding. So it's just crazy. So basically what happens is anytime someone needs something, whether it's like an invoice or someone needs to add another seat to their billing or someone has a question about the Twitter service that we have, she'll basically send me a recap throughout the day saying, here are the three things that you need to do. So it's almost like the opposite of yours, but that's when I feel great. It's like you don't have to deal with the 1,000 message. I just have to deal with one message with three things to do, and it's amazing.
That's sick, dude. I think like that's another level that one day I will be on. But like, no wonder you're on D&D all the time.
Oh my
Like,
God.
you haven't come
Yeah.
off doing the service since like last like summer. I swear to God. Like that is, I think, when I stopped being able to just like send you a text. And I never want to like click notify anyway, because I feel like that's so rude. People who do that to me, like I actually just want to like delete their number.
Dude,
So
so I was on D&D, like the normal one. Now I'm on sleep mode. Like before, you and Nick and my family and whoever, a few friends used to be able to get through. Now, like it's just on sleep mode. Like everyone gets the notification. So like, if somebody Nick gets mad at me, he's like, bro, you take like hours to respond to me. And I'm like, I'm busy. My mom's like, hey, I gotta call you twice to get a hold of you. What's going on? So it's funny. Like everyone now is on sleep just because like sleep is the best. It shows no notifications. Do not disturb was cool because I could let you and a few other people through, but I hated seeing notifications. It made me anxious.
yeah, I mean, dude, like that many group chats, 200 group chats, I would be anxious to. I have a separate phone. I actually do have a separate phone. I have three
That's
phones.
honestly not a bad idea. Wow, that's a
Actually,
great
Jay,
idea.
how about you pony up a grand, buy yourself a brand new iPhone 15 Pro, titanium, 512 megabytes, and then get a new number for all these clients of yours, and then just you can have a phone that's basically just for me and Shaq and your wife.
Dude, I spent some time with my grandpa this past weekend. He has a flip phone. He doesn't get texts. He doesn't do social media. He doesn't get emails. I might even go the opposite. I might just leave my phone now as like the whatever iPhone I have, the nice one. And I might just get like an old school flip phone. So that way, like anyone that needs to reach me, like has to call me. Like you'd have to call me or, you know, maybe text me, like a text back, you know, a little bit. I might just go the opposite and just for a few 5, 10 people that I want to have the number, you can call my flip.
Bro, you can call my flip. Yeah. It was like the most Sam Parr thing you've ever said, bro.
Oh man. All right, let's do the episode. This has been a great intro, I guess.
Yeah, this has been phenomenal. We should do this more, bro. I don't know if I love just jumping right in. I feel like we should ramble a little bit often.
Let's do it. Okay.
All right. So my first topic for today is most creative business content creators. So obviously there's a lot of people that make content on business. I think 90% of it is garbage. It's always like people making reels about like how to send cold emails or something like that, or like value tweets, which just like honestly like make me want to jump off my balcony, bro. Like a lot of this stuff is just like, I don't want, that's why I'm bad at business, because there's no good business content to consume. I'm wondering if you have someone in mind who's like creative with the way they do it, like not just like a good content creator, but also like maybe the way they deliver the content is kind of interesting and unique.
Yeah. I think a few guys, you know, Hunter Weiss, I've talked to him a couple times. Yes. I don't know him that well.
I'm going to work with him soon.
Okay. I think he does a great job. And like, I think it's like his circle of guys. Like there's a guy named Zach that I don't know that about his Twitter stuff, but I've seen stuff on Instagram. He's gone like mega viral on Instagram. There's like this guy named Zach. I don't know his Instagram handle, but you know what I'm talking about?
Zach Pogrob.
Yeah. Like Zach, Hunter. And then Hunter even shared one guy recently that's like taking off like crazy on Instagram. No one knows who he is, but like he's just doing insane videos. It was called Maximize or something by, and then it's Maximise. I guess this guy's creating like some great content. He went from like 600 followers to like, I don't know, 50 or 60,000 followers like in a couple weeks. So I feel like those guys in that circle are doing a really good job. Were you thinking similar?
Yeah, mine's kind of in the same ballpark. Just like guys that put a lot of effort into their content. Danco is another good one. Danco has blown up in the last couple of years, which is crazy because I remember when he had like 50K on Twitter. Yeah. And that was like his biggest channel. And I went out to, I think it was dinner with him one time in Austin. Not just me and him. There was like a group of us and he was there. Seemingly a cool guy. I never knew that he was going to be that famous. And now I feel like I should have asked for an autograph or something like that, you know?
Yeah, he went like mainstream. Like he did like the whole, what's his name? Like Iman route. He went the whole, not, I don't mean that negatively. He went the whole, who's the other guy we talk about? You told me about that has like the glitch stuff. I forgot his name.
Oh, Luke Belmar. Yeah.
Luke. Yeah. Like Dan kind of went mainstream, like in a good way, where like he just kind of like a celebrity now.
Well, his videos are just really good. Like I'll be totally fair here. I've never watched Dan's videos because, and I hate to even say this, but like I kind of judged the book by its cover, where it was like a lot of the sort of platitude-y like health or self-help stuff you usually see online. And I was like, it's probably like more for beginners. And then Ben was watching his videos one time. I think Ben took an edible. Why do we always talk about Ben taking edibles in the podcast? But Ben took an edible and was watching Dan Coe's videos and was like, dude, these are actually really like well done and just good videos.
And I think Hunter did some of them. I don't know if he did all of them, but I think he and Hunter worked together. So I didn't know. That's kind of how I found Hunter, was through kind of the fact that he was doing some of Dan's stuff. And I actually tried similar style, like of the stuff that Hunter was doing. And it's not easy to do. Like I paid some people and it was cool and it was good, but like there's definitely a science and a formula to it. And those guys got it.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, formula for going viral, Cam Munier. You know who that is?
Cam, no. I'm going to look
his name on Instagram is It's Camera Cam. I'm pretty sure that might be his Instagram. It's something like that. Cam is my video guy. He's the agency that I work with for YouTube and everything. And I remember when he started like doing reels. It was before he even posted his first reel on Instagram. He showed me like we were filming something just in my living room. And he showed me and it was like on frame. There was like, dude, like thousands of edits. He said it took like 30 hours to get one clip done that was like a minute long. Wow. And I was like, dog, like how are you gonna scale this? Like, let's hope this gets views. I know he's good at what he does, and it's all about like video editing stuff because that's what he's been doing for years.
Wow.
And I remember I remember we first started posting, and I think he was getting like a couple hundred, a couple thousand views here and there. Bro, every single week, this guy is having like 1 to 3 bangers that are just going crazy because he is so surgical with the way that he edits his clips. Like, he'll have, there's some growth hacking stuff that he does too, but like, dude, he can just pump out views like automatic, like 1 to 5 million views a week with this kid, which is just insane. So like, if anyone wants to like watch his stuff and just see if you can like not replicate it, because you can't, you just don't have the editing chops, but at least try and like use some of his hooks and scripts or whatever, maybe.
Yeah.
Do that. The other one is Eddie Cumberbatch. Eddie Cumberbatch is just like, he's just a cool man. Do you know Eddie?
I'm not sure. Eddie, what's the last name?
Cumberbatch. Kid from, he's like 19 or 20 from Chicago. He does like the growth operator stuff where basically like you pitch someone to make them like a school membership, and you just like grow it for them, and they just use their personal brand to promote it. So kind of sick, but yeah, he's really good. He just got like a cool style. He like uses like keywords and stuff that people like remember that they associate with him. Like broke influencer syndrome is like something that Eddie kind of coined. And he always like, he's got dreads. So he like puts the mic, like the lap mic, in his dread, and he'll just like, it still picks it up. Like, it's sick.
Super so cool. Dude, there's something about video and going viral on video that's different than going viral on Twitter or LinkedIn. Like, I think if you go viral, let's say with 1 million views on Twitter or LinkedIn, you probably could get anywhere from maybe a couple hundred to a couple thousand, not 100,000, a couple hundred to a couple thousand, right? Maybe you get 250 to 2,500, maybe upwards of a few thousand more. I feel like if you do like 1 million, you know, 5 million video, you could get 5, 10, 20,000 followers off a single video if it's done well, right? And then if they go look at your other stuff and it's good too, like I feel like the stuff that you were doing on TikTok, because it was so well done and because it was video and because all your stuff was really good, I mean, dude, you racked up what, 500,000 followers in a year, year and a half? Like, what was the time frame?
Yeah, it was about a year and a bit.
And how many, I mean, how many views do you think you got lifetime?
Probably 100 million? 60 million.
60 million? Dude, look at this. Like on LinkedIn, the last 30 days, last 28 days, whatever it was, I've done like 9 or 10 million impressions on LinkedIn. And I've probably gained like 5,000 to 10,000 followers on my personal account, like in the last month, because it's like, I don't know. Don't get me wrong, that's great. Like, I'd love to do that all the time, right? But it took me probably 150, 200 million views on LinkedIn to go from 27,000 followers to 270,000 followers. So I think it takes more views on written text or written content than it does on video content to get the same number of followers. So it's kind of just crazy.
Because like a view is more intentional than an impression.
Yes.
Like a view on TikTok, I think they only even count it if you watch at least like a second of it.
Interesting.
But like an impression on Twitter is just like, you could just scroll really fast and scroll and buy it. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean you read it. So like, and a lot of times you'll see like a video posted on Twitter that has like maybe 2 million impressions. And like, wow, this video got 2 million views in you know, a day. It's like, well, 2 million impressions. So yeah, I mean, you need to work harder to gain a bigger audience on Twitter or LinkedIn, and you need to be able to write. You know what I mean? Like, you can be an idiot and just turn on a camera and like, you know, get a bunch of views on TikTok or Instagram. It's, I don't know. I think you're playing a hard game with LinkedIn and Twitter, but it's obviously working out. Because also those people that follow you really care about you.
Yes, it's a harder game. It's the one I want to be playing because it's easier and better for me. But so here, for example, I just pulled it up. So in the last week on LinkedIn, I had 2.3, almost 2.4 million impressions on my content on LinkedIn. And that drove an average of 450 followers a day. So I gained about 3,100 followers on LinkedIn this past week. Right, so you times that by 4, which is pretty average. So yeah, I'm doing 10, 12,000 followers a month right now on my personal account, which still isn't bad. That's being said too. I'm also being very lazy. Like, I'm posting a lot less, and B, like, I'm not updating posts to have a call to action. Dude, whenever a post goes viral, if I can update the post on Twitter to say like, follow me, and then I'll tag myself for more content like this, it really does boost it. and I just have been lazy. So I probably could optimize that instead of getting 12,000 a month. I probably could get like 15 or 20,000 a month off the same views if I wasn't being lazy. So it's still really good and it's really good quality. And I get a lot of people joining the newsletter and a lot of clients from it. But it's just interesting. Like as you're talking about these video creators, it's like you can nail video also with their in. Dude, you can just go mega viral. Like I've never gained, some of these people could gain 10, 20, 40, 50,000 people in a week. I've never done that. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. But also like I've seen this firsthand, not firsthand, like for myself, but for close friends of mine. If you gain followers really, really, really fast, they're not worth as much as you think they are. You know what I mean? Like some people with 100K on Instagram, all those followers are new and they might be unqualified to buy whatever you're trying to sell. And they, you know, they just, you can launch something and make $0. I've seen that happen a couple of times.
Yeah, for sure.
So, but anyway, I think we got good audiences, bro. I'm super grateful for all that we have.
Yeah, no, I mean, I wouldn't change it for the world. I also think too, text is easier to keep up with. So, you know, I could be more sustainably getting 10, 15,000 followers a week over a long period of time. Where with video, like you do have to go viral to build a following. Like it's very hard to build the same following by like base hits every day, right? Mm-hmm. Like I'm hitting probably doubles every day on LinkedIn. Sometimes I hit home runs. To go mega viral, you have to hit a home run or a grand slam often, which is very hard. You've mastered it. Some people have mastered it, but the masses won't.
I haven't mastered it. I honestly, bro, I've been super lazy with TikTok because I've just had too much going on. But when I'm going back to Canada and like, I'm starting to drive. I'm driving from Miami back to Canada over crazy. 2 days, leaving Thursday morning. Once I'm in Canada, it's go time. Just making content every day. It's going to be it. Okay. Second topic, man, we're like almost half an hour in right now. Okay. I wanted to talk about Sean Frank's tweets, bro, because I think Sean Frank is hilarious. I know that you guys did a podcast together a long time ago before Diamond Download was a thing. It used to be called, what was your old podcast called?
E-commerce Opportunity. Yeah, I did one with him and then he's the CEO and I did with his CMO, Connor. Those guys are wicked smart, very smart.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably ripping now, right? Like they've been around for what, 5, 6 years with Ridge?
Yeah, I think they're doing north of 100 million a year. I don't know how much, but I think north of 100.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're staying on the topic of creative business content creators. But dude, so I wanted to like take a couple of tweets that he's had because like you're a D2C guy. I'm curious to know if you have any thoughts to sort of, I hate this, but piggyback on what Sean's saying.
Okay.
By the way, if Sean's watching this, follow me back, bro. Like, come on. Like I've literally been in his DMs before. I don't know why. Anyway, so he's been doing these like daily tips, like 2024 tip of the day for e-com. And so the first one I have is, he goes, tip of the day, day 8, you can be first order profitable, but my LTV lets me lose money the first 9 months. Who is funding that loss? No one wants to bag or hold your losses. First order profitability is owning your destiny. How to get there? Reduce scale until you're serving the people who actually need your product. Improve margins so you can spend more and still be profitable, and make your product more desirable so marketing is more efficient. Losing money on a new customer in 2024 is the stupidest thing you can do. Revenue is a vanity metric, like bragging about your email open rate, which is kind of funny. So do you agree with the idea that like people should in general stop trying to do the loss leader technique where it's like you know, spend $100 to acquire a customer at 50 and then try and make that money back with LTV?
Yeah, I do. I don't know that I always agreed with that. I'd say I mostly agreed with that. I think with like funding going down and just the way of the world, like, and also too, I think the way that people are moving, like I'd rather be way more profitable and make a couple million bucks a year than lose a bunch of money and hope to sell one day at a huge valuation. I don't think it happens anymore. So I definitely agree with that, right? The more money that you can make, I'm okay breaking even, but if I could make money on the first sale, I mean, that's like the holy grail, right? I think it's easier said than done. I don't think it's necessarily easy to do, but I think that should be everyone's North Star, right? It is hard if you have to wait 9 months to get payback or 12 months. And obviously there's no guarantee, right? There's a whole ton of things that can happen. And who knows if you'll even be around in 9 months or 12 months if you can't be profitable as quickly as possible. So I would agree with that. And that's why I think email and SMS and retargeting and just all these things are so important, right? Because I don't know if it takes 7 or 10 or 12 touches, what that number is, but there's just so many things that you need to do to get people to buy. So I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. The next one is probably going to be, I mean, you definitely have experience working with all kinds of brands. I know you're a little bit kind of out of the product now, the agency, but you still have tons of insight into like the way these businesses work and have worked. So this one's about like, okay, he said, this is day six. So January 6th, he said, okay, the luxury business is the only business with luxury margins. He goes, my enemy Arnaud said that. It's true. Luxury good. This is probably a long one. So cut me off anytime you have something to say.
Okay.
Luxury goods have a parabolic increase in price for a linear increase in quality. That means people pay 100% more for every 10% increase in quality. Think about cups. Plastic cups are essentially free. You can use them forever. But Tiffany sells a 5-set of cups for $425. It's an exponential price increase for a small increase in functionality and usability. What does this have to do with e-com? The best way to increase revenue is to move up or down the price curve. Ralph Lauren started on the high on the price curve and unlocked value through Polo and outlet offers. They took worse margins for more market, but most of us aren't starting high on the price curve. You can start mid and work your way up. When we launched Ridge, we had a $45 option. In 2018, our AOV was $80. Our AOV has grown and grown every year as we work our way up the price curve, and with it, our margins increase. Today, our AOV, I'm almost done. Today, our AOV is hundreds of percent higher than launch, and our margins have followed suit. Tip of the day is understand your industry and where you sit on the price curve. If high, work your way down to increase market. If low, work your way up to increase margin. It is not an either or. Ralph proved you can have your cake and eat it too. So basically just talking about like, is it better to have like less customers and have like charge more, or to have more customers and charge less, is kind of what he's saying. Like you've seen this with e-com. You've also seen it with info and services. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think it's easier to get fewer customers paying more than it is to get the masses to pay less, right? I just think with the messaging, with, you know, the offer, I think it's easier, like just based off the math, it's easier to convince fewer people to do something than it is more people, right? And I've been thinking a lot about this. I was literally thinking about this last night with like the LinkedIn service. I think we're kind of in like no man's land. We're $500 a month, which is not cheap and it's not expensive, right? It could be a lot more. It could be $1,000 a month. It could be $1,500. It could be $2,000, right? I'm happy with where we're at because it's one of those prices that like, it's very easy to say yes to. And we really have to like fuck up for you to say no to once you're in, right? So for me, like I've been thinking a lot about this, and because I have like overseas talent, that's great. Because we can kind of scale, like every person we add, we can add, I don't know, 30 or 50 clients, like our margins stay the same and our margins are 80%. And it's just throwing a few extra bodies and it's very productized. I'm okay with it. But yeah, like in a perfect world, we would have a slightly fewer clients that are maybe of the similar, maybe higher caliber. I don't know. I'm very happy with who we have, obviously. And we'd be charging $1,000, $1,500, $2,000 a month. And we'd be holding their hands a little bit closer. Probably in a perfect world. That being said, I'm very happy with where we're at. I think with you, like you're even kind of proving this where you had a, you know, $1,000. Well, the course initially was less, but it kind of is somewhere around $1,000 now. And you've kind of prioritized a higher ticket offer that's what, 5-7 times more. It's more hands-on, it's more helping, and it's more bang for your buck, right? Like it's gonna be maybe twice as hard as you for you to get someone to pay you $6,000 a month and one grand a month. But when you do, you're making an extra $5,000. Like it's just a huge amount of number for not that much more work. So I think with services for sure, the more you can charge and the fewer people, the higher touch, probably the better. And then for products, yeah, I'd say it's a little bit different, a little bit harder, but I would try to increase price. And then if you do discount or if you do other things, maybe it seems like they're getting a better deal, but you're almost at the same price if you have to run a discount. I almost think like if you're going to run a discount brand, go 20 or 40 or 60% above and beyond and then discount it down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dude, I mean, you're right. We were talking about the discount brand thing. When was that? What was that? Do you remember what that was about? Because I remember we had that conversation a while ago.
I don't remember, but I remember we did talk about something like that. I don't remember when.
So let me just say, I think with info, I think it really does make more sense for both the customer and the business to have better, more expensive products. You know what I mean? Because like a hat like this, I don't know how much it cost because it was a gift, but like I wouldn't pay $500 for a better version of this hat.
Yep.
This hat's whatever. It's like $50, right? It's a $50 hat. I would gladly also wear a $10 hat. Like the quality doesn't really matter that much. But with info, like we get way better results with Inner Circle because yep. There's just so much more that their extra investment allows us to do for them.
Yep.
That they can't get with just a course. And like, it's not like a $50 course that I could give them is like even close to what I can deliver with like a couple grand. Right. So, I agree. I think like, I don't know for e-com. So what's the conclusion for e-com? You think that people should go high and the discount down or should,
I think that with how expensive everything is, like, payroll, team, ad costs, labor, like how expensive everything is, like you have to bake that into your pricing and things are only getting more expensive. So I would slightly edge a little bit more expensive or premium than you're thinking. And just know that like, for whatever reason, if it's too expensive and it's not selling, you just discount it down a little bit. So instead of like selling something at $80, I would start it at $99, right? And if you need to discount down to 80, you can. But you can kind of do it seldomly and kind of within reason. And you will get probably a majority of people buying at 100 or the 99. And some people will buy 80. And that blended amount will probably be $10 or $15 more than you'd make otherwise per sale, which really does add up. That could be the difference in terms of being break even or profitable, right? So I think for e-commerce, probably price are slightly higher than you would think. Include things like free shipping if you go higher, right? Like I think there are things you can do just to sweeten the offer versus going cheap and then charging for your shipping or something.
Interesting. Okay, solid. I agree. All right, bro. So last one, and this is an interesting one. So by the way, shout out Sean Frank, Sean Ecom, homie. I know that he's a friend of yours. I wish he was a friend of mine. I remember I was in an Uber. So it was when I went to New York. The Uber from like JFK to Manhattan was like an hour and a half. It was so long, bro. Allo, my girl, was asleep in my lap and I was just scrolling through his Twitter all the way back to like Black Friday. And I was just dying laughing. He's hilarious.
He's very funny. Anyway, yeah, he really is.
Homie. Okay. Last topic. Employ friends and family, or is that dumb? Is the name of it. So long story short, I had a distant family member that I've seen maybe 10 times in my life hit me up, text me. I guess my dad, oh, we got to hurry this one up. My dad, I guess, gave him my number and he was like, "Hey man, I lost my job. Like, I don't know really what to do. I told your dad," he said that kind of half jokingly, "that maybe I had something for you. So I'm just hitting you up to see if there's anything that I can do." And I was like, "What are you good at?" He's like, "Well, I'm an electrician." I'm like, "You ever hit phones? Like, you ever done sales?" He was like, "I mean, not really, but I can learn." And I was like, "Okay." And so, like, considering thinking about it, because like, I might need a dialer. You know what I mean? If you're competent, like, he's a grown ass man. So he's like 50. You know what I mean? So like,
yeah.
It's not like he would, because all my other closers are 19 years old. You know what I mean? So like, he'd be like the only grown man on the group and maybe he can hit some phones. But I'm also thinking like, this is really just for, I need advice, bro. Like, I don't think I want to hire him because it's just kind of weird. It'd be a weird dynamic.
Yeah.
But like, have you ever had experience hiring like friends or family? I know your brothers all do stuff. I don't think they really count, but like, I don't know, people that you know outside that like, maybe you just want to give them an opportunity, you know, some easy gig where they can make a couple grand. Like, have you ever done that and has it worked out or has it completely not worked out?
Yeah, it's interesting. Obviously, we need to know more about the 50-year-old dude. It probably wouldn't be the fit because he'd be calling a bunch of 18 to 25-year-olds and it might sound like their dad. It might be a little bit weird. Or maybe it would work. It's like, here's a message from your father, right? Join this inner circle. When you're my age, you're going to look back and be super stoked you did, right? Maybe like in a weird way. It's like the future version talking to themselves type of thing and that could work. But realistically, probably not, especially with the lack of probably understanding of like what you do. It's probably like the conversation at Christmas where it's like, "So what do you do online? How does that work?" Like he if he pays for the program first, maybe he can do it, right? And on that note too, like with family and friends, I've hired my brothers, as I mentioned. I hired two of the three. I tried hiring the third. He opted out. Probably was for the better for both of us, right? Because we're still close. And I don't know if we would have been close if he worked for me. He's just a different flavor. He's an acquired taste, to say the least. With some of my close friends, they're all very smart and successful in their own way. I probably would hire them if they really needed it, although I'd probably prefer not to, just because, you know, friendships, I think, are the most like sacred. Friends and family are the most sacred things, and some people let silly things kind of get in the way of other things. I probably wouldn't at this point, just because I'm a little bit out of the loop, a little bit checked out. I'm not involved enough where I don't know like what could happen, and it might be a reflection of me for better or for worse. It's hard. It's really hard. I have no situations where like husbands and wives work together and it's great. And I know situations where husbands and wife work together and it's just too much. You want to have some separation. I probably wouldn't, unless it was like a short-term temporary thing. And I don't know. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. What do you think?
I think I'm not going to do it. I am in kind of a cool situation right now where like, if someone that I know really needed a job, like really needed it, then like I could give them something to do. Like I definitely wouldn't let them be one of my copywriters. Like that's not going to happen. But like, I feel like anyone can kind of do sales and like, bro, we got 10,000 leads in the CRM that like might buy something. So like, I'm positive that like, if I said to my uncle, a second removed, I don't know what he is, bro. Half uncle. And I was like, yo, here's a lead list, run through this, you'll probably make some money.
Yeah,
you know, like it's an opportunity for someone who actually like is decent, if they just want to make some cold calls, to make like one to maybe $3,000 a week. You know what I mean? Like if they're really hammering and they're scripted good, they can make some money. And I feel like that's kind of like a cool feeling where it's like, at this point now I'm kind of like Uncle Mace, you know what I mean? I'm the uncle, you know?
Yeah.
And like, I like that. Like, what would you have someone do? Like, would you like make them an SDR for the agency, or would you like make them be one of your Ukrainian women on LinkedIn? Like, what do you do?
I think it depends on the person and like what business has an opportunity. I don't think I would hire someone if we didn't have a need. I think if we had a need and based off the personality, based off their skills that they're qualified, I think I'd probably have them interview with someone other than myself and probably not mention that it was a friend. I probably almost want them to interview anonymously just to see if they were qualified to get it. So I think that's probably how I would do it. Like now that I have a second to think about it, is like if I knew someone was qualified for a job and we were hiring for it, I'd probably just have them submit an application without any reference or kind of approval from me and kind of just get some feedback and let the hiring managers and the folks that were actually be working with them make the final decision. I probably would do something like that. Because that way, if they hire them based off of their merit, they're probably qualified and probably could or should be a good fit, versus just kind of plugging someone into a system where you don't know if they're the right fit or not. And then they're kind of like this forced person and no one can really speak up because they're afraid of getting mad at the boss's friend, right? Kind of making it up. I wouldn't want to like make it uncomfortable for everyone around them just because of the relationship.
Yeah. I think it's a solid perspective. Dude, that's probably the perfect answer.
I hope none of my friends are listening to this and no one's hitting me up for a job.
Oh, all of my students are watching this thinking, oh, maybe Mason could get me a job.
Oh, did you see that screenshot I texted you before this?
You sent me another one, bro.
Yeah.
One. That, like, ridiculous. Anyway. Dude, great pod. I think this is great. Any last words?
No. Appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, man. Next time we do this, I will be back in the six. Having driven 21 hours. So I'm very excited. Honestly, genuinely very excited to do it.
All right, man. Safe travels.
All right. See you later, John Download. Bye, Chase.
All right. See ya.